Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling? Oh, we like professional wrestling, too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And Chris, for our drivel up here at the top, I have found a new... This is a grift. This is some carny stuff. This is pro wrestling. And the internet is full of these types of things. But this is my latest thing that I found on YouTube. Now, you and I have talked about like, so-and-so hears this song for the first time, this reaction video.
Oh, yes, of course.
This one, though, I have become fascinated with it because I didn't know it was a work at first. And then I got clued in. There are people who buy, if I told you what a coin pusher was, would you know what that was?
Is that like a Bitcoin thing?
Not exactly. It you see them in arcades. It's that thing with the sliding shelf.
Sure.
And you drop coins on it, trying to get the things in there. Well, the completely made up world of high stakes coin pushers, where these guys have bought a coin pusher and they've bought stuff from a casino supply store, and they pretend that they're in a casino. Like, they have the audio running in the background and everything, and they're doing an entire bit of, oh, well, we'll see what they give us afterwards, or we'll see what they say if I can get this prize that's leaning up against the glass, blah, blah, blah. And they pretend they're playing for actual money. Like, I paid $200,000 for 5 quarters. Let's see how we do today. And I am fascinated by this, Chris. I don't know why. It was just what I spent last weekend. On Saturday, I had this thing on for 3 hours watching these people do this stuff. And I'm just like, and then it's like, it's a ridiculous grift, but I'm just like, people are going to watch this stuff and believe it. And you look at the comments and people believe it. Oh man, that's such a great win for you, winning $10 million on a $300,000 buy-in. And you're just like, guys, there's nobody, or you can't hear anybody around him, you know, yelling congratulations or anything at him. You know,
and also the outcome's kind of irrelevant if the initial bet was really stupid. You know what I mean? Like, if you played roulette and you put $1 million, like your entire life savings, let's just say it's $1 million, right? You just put it all on one individual number, like 36. Even if you hit on 36, it was still a stupid bet in the first place. It doesn't make the bet not stupid. Just because the outcome is good, it doesn't make the original idea dumb.
Well, here's the magic of one of these channels. Is it started out fairly low stakes. It's like, oh, okay, I have a $500 buy-in. They've given me 50 quarters. You know, let's see how we do. But like this week's, I think he now knows that most people know that it's a bit. But some people still know. It's like, well, $1 million buy-in for 5 quarters.
They've taken one of my children hostage and given me 10 quarters. Let's see if I can free little Timmy.
Yeah, and if the first one said, well, I'm going to have to do another buy-in. We'll see how that goes. And, you know, they have these quarters, or they have chips stacked up in piles that they can knock over. And there's like dollar bills in there and earbud cases that they say, oh, they'll give me $100 for this, and like Bitcoin drawing type things in there. I mean, it's a hell of a carny grift. Because it's made to look real, but then you realize it's the same machine every time, and you go, huh, that's odd. And there's three different channels of this that I found. I'm like, there are three different people doing the same scam, And basically all it is it's a YouTube scam to get people to subscribe. And then once you subscribe, you start making money from all the ads that you're playing on the channel.
Right, right. Yeah. No, exactly. It's an engagement scam. I fell into one of those.
How did we not come up with this? That's what I'm upset about.
I fell into one of these this week, different arena on Twitter, where I clicked on a thread thinking, like, because it basically prefaced, like, the thread was going to be about a subject, right? And then as I'm reading through, I'm like, you're never actually going to address it. Oh, my God, you just totally baited me into engaging your tweets. Like,
It's an SEO keyword type thing.
Yeah, effectively, you keyworded me into looking through your thread because I had to read four or five tweets to realize.
Lead guitar, and then it started talking about, you know, guitars were invented, blah, 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 blah.
No, it's about this internet celebrity person, and it was supposed to be like this damning indictment on her. And I was like, oh, what's the tea on this person? And I'm looking through and it never actually cuts to the chase. It's like it's going on for tweet after tweet after tweet without ever actually addressing the problematic nature of this person or whatever. I was like, okay, all right, cool. Yeah, I see what you did here. Screw you. Like I clicked out of it.
Oh, by the way, kudos to you, Hatchet. Very popular reference in the Voices of Wrestling in the Discord. On the Shake Them Ropes channel.
I'm hearing positive things. They want to keep me around. They don't ever want me to host this show, but they'll keep me around for the references. Not a chance in hell. There'll be a mutiny. There'll be a mutiny. The petition to Joe Lanza submitted that will be more heavily signed than that one that Smart Mark Sterling was trying to circulate a couple of weeks ago for Swerve Scott. Please don't let Chris host.
Oh, yeah. Well, getting to the news. WWE discovered an additional $5 million in payments by Vince McMahon, one in 2007 and another in 2009. This makes $19.6 million in payments thus far discovered by McMahon to women who had worked both for the company as performers and employees. This is the kind of money that shouldn't have been used for company funds, Chris, just to clarify that. Brandon Thurston, this is a funny note to me. Because I think, I don't know whether or not this is something or not something, but I'll let you decide. It's going to be other one, but Brandon Thurston noted that the year in total payments of $5 million matched the donations to the Donald Trump Foundation that the company made in those specific years. While they were supposed to be charitable donations, Trump actually used the money to settle lawsuits.
Huh. Jeez. I mean, as the week sort of wear on, and this story continues to spiderweb and get bigger and bigger. I think it's been really underappreciated by the mainstream public, like just how horrible Vince McMahon is. He's not like a big news story or whatever, but like it's pretty crazy to have a high profile CEO of like a major Wall Street traded company go down in such a massive, massive scandal like this.
Well, and at the same time, it's a CEO that none of the other business leaders care about all that much because they don't like it's going down in secret because nobody really cares about wrestling.
Right.
More on this. The release also noted that other payments were made on behalf of another executive who is no longer with the company, John Laurinaitis, which is the confirmation that Laurinaitis is gone. The new payments were said to be unrelated to the allegations that led to the investigation. Company was going to release it.
That means there's more allegations.
Yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah, that's all that can mean, right?
The company was going to release its financial information for the quarter on August 9th, the date hinted, although the company had not publicly released that information because of the investigation. They did not give a date for their investors call and second quarter financial results being released. Chris? This is going to get worse because I think the HBO Real Sports story is in the 20s, whatever it is. It's August 20 something on there. This hasn't taken a hit on the stock just yet because, of course, you know, they're still profitable, all that other stuff. But
And also, I mean, increasingly as these stories stink for Vince McMahon, it's not as though investor sentiment is going to be like, oh, no, bring back the old man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, bring back the old man. Not a chance in hell. I have been thinking about in the last week, the bizarre Freudian Titus O'Neil promo where Titus was sent out as the proxy for Vince McMahon there as his final petition to all of us.
Here's another follow-up question, because I got this from a friend earlier this week, and I'm kind of stealing it, but also modifying it. Okay, it makes $19.6 million in payments thus far discovered. Over under that the final number is going to be 50.
I was thinking over 30 million at the okay. end of it. Yeah. But I mean, I'm going to say under
might be
a little high, but okay. I mean, no, I'm with you. Like, one of the big problems here is this just keeps spiderwebbing, that there's just more and more and more of this. In this sense, good on the company for kind of cutting bait when they did. 'Cause like, it's not like this is going to get better. I think that like maybe Vince was initially convincing people he could hang on, but I just think that it's going to take a minute before we can fully process the awfulness of Vince McMahon. That like, let's not get stuck on the numbers. The numbers are actually sort of, in a way, an indication of his viciousness and his evilness. Mm-hmm. The reason being that like all these payments are being done to cover up evil acts that he didn't want being public. Sexual harassment acts, sexual misconduct acts. I don't want that to get lost in the numbers here. That like the story here is that Vince McMahon, like, you know, for all of his branding and marketing that he's an asshole, and if you think I'm an asshole, congratulations, I am an asshole, and like I've never been cool.
Let's put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about being cool, like putting that on it. These are all t-shirt slogans, by the way, people.
These are actual shirts that were in the WWE.
Actual store. Shirts that you could buy online. A Vince McMahon with his avatar on there. This is his brand. And at the end of the day, like, this wasn't a character. Like, yeah, it was a character, but like, this guy really is that bad. And it's not like, oh man, that's cool. It's like,
covering
up
the Ring Boy scandal was bad. The Nancy Argentino, the payoff to get
Ico Pro. I mean, you can go on.
You're putting Ico Pro with covering up murder. Okay.
You know, I mean, look, a lot of people would look at those two things more. I can't.
Murdered my time.
Yeah. All right. Hawkins, you know what? My moral planing there might have been miscalculated. I'm reconsidering that one position of mine.
Chris Novembrito goes into whataboutism. Yeah. Well, what about Ico Pro?
What about Ico Pro? Oh, you know, no one ever. Everyone wants to talk about this murder, but no one wants to talk about Ico Pro.
No one ever wants to talk about the blight on humanity that was Ico Pro. Oh, dear Lord. there's a lot of uneasiness within the NXT UK crew. The next two sets of television tapings were canceled on August 9th. Reason given was at BT Sports Studios, where they tape had to be used for football/soccer, depending on where you live. That's what it's called, coverage.
But I call it football.
I call it the footy. But as you can imagine with the talent, how the reaction is, given you could tape somewhere else and shutting down tapings is never a good sign. Nobody has really been told anything. Now, there is also a rumor that Gallus is being brought over to NXT proper to do a run. It would not shock me if they just look, as much as Triple H had his dreams of world domination, it never got off the ground past NXT UK.
No. And at this point, they need to resettle into making NXT good.
You know who this NXT women's division could use?
I was about to say, Mako Satomura would be clutch, man. Yeah. As a trainer coach, I mean, she's the perfect trainer for the women's division down in NXT. You get JC Jane having a program with Mako would help JC just put the finishing polish on what she needs to do. Mm-hmm. There are a number of people who could go to the Mako Satomura finishing school and really be polished at the end of it.
I agree. I like a lot of that crew. I do like a lot of that NXT UK crew. Yeah. Hey, the wild boar, Mike Hitchman, come on over to the States, baby. I'm here for that.
Push him. Let's push the boar.
Let's push the boar. Lopez said, "This guy who lives about a mile and a half away from me, Gene LaBelle, passes away at the age of, I believe, 89. Gene LaBelle is pure pro wrestling. I don't know if Gene LaBelle rings a bell with you, Chris.
Yeah, no, he's the man who made Steven Seagal shit his pants.
Yes, that is correct. That is one of the stories. Is that on the on one of the movies, Gene LaBelle was working in stunts, and Seagal says, I heard you can, you know, take people on, old man. You won't be able to do that to me." LaBelle chokes him out. Apparently, bowel control was lost, but it's never talked about. Very famous stuntman.
It's been talked about enough times. Like, you can find people, like, it's been around as a story for long enough that, like, and I think LaBelle himself has told it, that, like, yeah,
a total worker, too. I mean, if you ever listen to interviews with him, total work. Loves to tell the tall tales, loves, you know, back when I was in Hollywood type of stuff.
On the flip of this, speaking of workers, like, you're talking about, like, fascinating, like, fixed and rigged work stuff. I'm absolutely mystified by Steven Seagal's, like, worked martial arts exhibitions from, like, the last any time in the last 15 years, United States, Russia, wherever the hell he is, like, his completely, like, sub pro wrestling, like, pro wrestling bumping is 1,000 times more convincing than, like, the way some of these judo guys bump for Steven Seagal, like, in these exhibitions. He'll, like, stick his arm out and people will, like, be like corkscrewing.
Was doing judo. His mom, I think, ran the Olympic Auditorium for a while. She was a boxing promoter of some kind, women's boxing promoter, but went into stunts. Was working stunts for a long, long time. He actually worked on a movie I was on, he did stunts for Liar Liar, and I was in the production office during that time. But and other things he did that are just fascinating. He is the basis of the Brad Pitt character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because I believe he is the subject of the story of the fight with Bruce Lee. Or at least the scrap with Bruce Lee in the back, possibly related to he was an accomplice to a murder at one point. I found that fascinating. Between three business partners who had a falling out, he was found not guilty, I believe. He really made Ronda Rousey the Ronda Rousey quote unquote character in the UFC. I don't know if you ever got to see Ronda's early run in UFC, but there's Judo Gene with a stopwatch, and it's like under 2 minutes, under a minute and a half, whatever, doing the time for when Ronda can slap on the arm bar and tap out somebody. Absolutely helped make Ronda Rousey who she was in UFC as the quote unquote baddest woman alive. Look, Ronda's talent and everything, well known at that time. But Judo Gene with the stopwatch put an extra layer to it that made her a character, that made her worth watching.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gene LaBelle. No, I don't have anything to add to this. He's a legend.
WWE should have used him.
Yeah, he's a legend in grappling. He just did. I mean, Daniel Bryan does the LaBelle lock. He's definitely a name.
I was shocked to find he was the basis for the Brad Pitt character. That I was like, wow, I did not know that.
Interesting. Yeah.
Takeshita, now for comings and goings and hurtings and other things. Takeshita has left the United States after his 4-month excursion. Say it's pretty damn good excursion he had. I would assume he will be back full time, hopefully for AEW at some point, if he does not get a big money deal in his home place. But I mean, he worked everywhere. He worked Defy, he worked PWG, he worked GCW, he worked every large and indie in the United States, usually towards the top of the card, if not a title match. And then in AEW, he had a murderer's row of matches with Adam Page, of course, Cesaro on Battle of the Belts.
He had Moxley.
Adam Cole and Moxley. Yeah. I mean, Dude. I mean,
and every one of those matches, he was taken care of.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone
after the
star
page,
made him.
After the Page match, he was very well taken care of, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like they're all about star making performances for him.
Well, this might go into a little Lazy River territory, but what the heck? WWE has decided to bring back the crew from a year and a half ago, it would appear. Last week's SmackDown, Karrion Kross and Scarlett making an appearance at the end of SmackDown. Dexter Lumis making an appearance at the end of Raw this week in Cleveland. Max Dupree back with Maximum Models International, or what's the name of that stable? Do you happen to know off the top of your head?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, no.
I want to say Maximum Male Models. I think that's what it is. And as we were going to air, I turn on SmackDown, and Ashanti the Adonis, Top Dollar, and B-Fab hit Row back on SmackDown. Fascinating.
Interesting. No, okay. So without Swerve, the big question mark to me is who is going to be the mouth and the worker of this, and it's going to have to be Ashanti. In order for Hit Row minus them to work, I know they look at Top Dollar as the guy, but like Top Dollar was sort of like
he couldn't work very well.
He couldn't work very well, right? Yeah, maybe
B-Fab is clumsy in the ring. I mean, and yes. I think she might have done an indie while out, but I haven't heard of her being booked anywhere. I know that Ashanti the Adonis did some shows.
No, Ashanti's good.
Great. Yeah,
to me, like, look, can Hit Row still work without Swerve? The answer is yes, but, and the but is if you run this act through Ashanti and make him the centerpiece, and Top Dollars is heavy and B-Fab's, you know, like the sidekick piece. Because maybe if she's better at working, she'd be good as in the women's division. But like, I still have nightmares of that match against Electra Lopez. That was such a bad match.
Yeah. I'm of the opinion that Hit Row, I don't know if Ashanti can carry the act. That's my fear. And I don't know if Top Dollar can carry the act necessarily either. And then go.
What I mean, theoretically, though, those two guys together might be able to find a synergy.
But here's the other thing. They do have options if they wanted to do it this way. And I know that everybody could be like, oh, you're just putting all the black people together in a stable.
You could always add someone else in there, though,
to
be
the
ringer.
Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams to this act.
That would help.
You could add whichever one of the Street Profits you're going to turn heel and make them the leader of this act. You could do an off the wall, off the board choice if you wanted to for comedy's sake, but it would kill the act, but it would still get over like a comedy. You know, who'd be the most least likely to be in Hit Row? Like Sami Zayn?
Yeah,
Kevin Owens is part of Hit Row.
No. Zayn's character in particular, as because he's completely delusional, sort of the character.
Right.
Zayn thinking that he's a good rapper and that he like wants to drop like a rap single about like the rottenness of the establishment of WWE or something like that. Like that.
Oh,
that
I got it. I got who it is, because they just killed his character off on Monday. It's gonna be the next Elias character.
Oh, Elrond. Elrod's a rapper.
Elrod's a rapper.
L, because it's L as in L hyphen Ron. here's our new lead vocalist, L Ron.
Hello, my name is Elrond.
My name is Elrond,
and I'm here to say
it's Elias style Beastie Boy cadence.
Yeah. It's monotonous.
My name is Elrond, and I'm here to say
I come to train in WWE every day. I don't know, whatever. In AEW, Penelope Ford back in action in the AEW dark tapings. I like Penelope Ford. I think she has a lot of potential in terms of being that mid-card heel that's just solid.
Yes, I am
in that kind of
you.
In that yep. Carmella vein, kind of. I think I don't think she's ever gonna be main event, but I think she's solid on that as a gatekeeper. And I really
she's
like
so yeah, she's like super solid. Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's like I feel weird saying that she's like I don't see the ceiling as high as, you know, like, yeah, it is.
Other people did because of her athleticism.
And yeah. Like, and she's got
that. She was amazing. And it's like, okay, now that she's learning to, now that she's kind of becoming a ring general type of thing. I mean, but she's a presence.
You know what though? I'm actually going to tap the brakes on myself here. Cause it's okay. Like that, you know, the name that comes to mind is Serena Deeb, where like,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's, you could totally see Penelope Ford 5-6 years from now, really put it all together. Still have the athleticism, or a lot of the athleticism, and also have the ring IQ. And she's got the, you know, she's got the act or whatever. She's got the look and the charisma thing going. And if she, you know, she got stronger on the promo side too. That would be the biggest plus. But like, I guess there's still room for her to grow too. So yeah, no, I'd like to see her get more burn.
Well, and now that they've basically said Kip Sabian's the guy under the box slash paper bag. That's been, could believe they just did that at a random throwaway line. Was it Rampage last week or was it Dynamite? I can't remember, but it was like, oh, and Kip Sabian's been falling around Pac at these shows. I'm like, dude, you built this guy up for almost 6 months, maybe longer, as a guy in the audience wearing this box or wearing the bag, and you just go out of the way and go, oh, that's Kip Sabian.
It makes you wonder if they even knew who the guy under the bag was going to be. You know what I mean? Like if they, I mean, I've not done this, but like, have they really been sending out Sabian for 6 months, or have they just been sending out a placeholder body that looks like, you know, a medium sized guy who could be a wrestler?
Yeah. Injury news in AEW, Matt Menard coming out saying that during Blood and Guts, he suffered a torn labrum and torn rotator cuff. But he's still doing run-ins. He's still going to be on TV. I think that's, he's not going to get surgery. He's just going to wait for it to heal up. Worst news, though, is in the AEW women's division, as Chris Statlander will be undergoing knee surgery. This time, the right knee, which was the good knee that she had, those were injured during an August 5th match with Sierra in Grand Rapids, and it gave out as she delivered a high kick. So, yeah, Statlander, I thought they had pegged her to take the title from Jade. So this makes things very, very interesting.
Sure, sure. It sure does.
Because I think they continue the streak in its.
Oh, okay. You say she beats Storm, and that like leads to tension between Tony and Thunder.
Well no, but I mean the TBS title, the Jade Cargill title, is now probably just going to be streak until they figure out who the heck they want to put this off on.
Yeah, I mean, no, they very well might, you know, make her Jadeberg.
Ratings interesting. WWE Raw having another great week, winning the week on cable. 1,956,000 viewers with a 0.54 in the demo. Hour 3 outperforming hour 1, which was interesting in some ways. AEW Dynamite, strong week in its own right, 972,000, 0.33 in the demo. NXT, 597,000 viewers, 0.13 in the demo. Battle of the Belts last week, 0.12, 437 viewers. SmackDown, 2,093,000, 0.49. And Rampage, 468,000 viewers on TNT last week, 0.15. Anything stand out to you there?
Rampage just continuing to have not great.
That's
numbers.
That's a pretty good number for Rampage, though, 468.
That's, which is still, I mean, that's good for them, but those aren't good. I don't know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Chris, if I ask you, what was the top video that people watched from Raw on Monday, what would you say it was? Because it was far and away the top video on Raw.
Okay. Let me look at what happened on Raw right quick here and just make sure that I know what's up. It's not going to be Dexter Lumis's return. I know that much.
You're actually wrong. We can end it there.
Oh, am I? It is Dexter Lumis's return.
It almost doubled everybody else.
Oh my God. Really?
It got over 1 million views on YouTube.
I don't understand anything.
1,073,515. The next biggest was Bobby Lashley versus Ciampa, 524,000.
I just don't get that. You have a Rey Mysterio segment on this.
Oh, you can get into Mysterio Science Theater 3000 if you want on the Lazy River, because it is that time, the Lazy River of wrestling criticism, anything we watched, anything that comes to mind, anything you wish to talk about, we can do it right here. In the mix this week is SmackDown and Rampage from last week. Also, Battle of the Belts, if you wanted to talk about that, since that was after our show that we recorded. Chris, I will let you take the first crack at this.
Okay. So I guess my first thing is I want to throw down some positive vibes. I know I slag every Rey Mysterio promo ever, but I really enjoyed this Rey Mysterio and Finn Balor match.
Oh yeah.
I know it was long, but it was enjoyable. Rey had his working boots on. It had a nice pace to it. It was a really solid match. I will forever rag on Rey Mysterio's promo style. It's funny. It's just funny.
I actually said something and now I can't unhear it every time. Like how Rey and Dominic have just met for the first time and they always talk to each other like that. And it's terrible. It's almost the other half of the Bucks and Paige doing their promos in the
yeah, they're a soap opera. Yeah. Matt learned acting from watching The Days of Our Lives. he thinks that's like solid human acting. No, I really enjoyed the Balor and Mysterio match. It was sort of everything it needed to be. Even you knew where the finish was going to go. It was a TV match, but it was just really a spirited performance. So
there
that's my
some interesting matches like that this week, because that Ciampa Lashley match was better than it had any right to be.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I really liked that.
I love his promo too.
Yeah. Oh, the Harley Race one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I really like, yeah, Ciampa had a week. And it was rumored that they're going to make him look strong, even if they didn't give him the title. And I think it worked. I mean, I think it makes up for, Vince would just go, look how small he is, that kind of thing. And, in this day and age, camera tricks can really help sometimes, Kevin Dunn. I'm also going to praise some stuff in the WWE that I found. They are making interesting choices. Like staging wise too, because during Raw, the entire through line, while things were going on, where things were going on in the background that nobody knew what the heck was going on. Like I think Miz was cutting a promo back in the garage area and Nikki
the car
Cross
thing.
And,
yeah.
And Doudrop were staring at a car accident. Someone else was talking, a bunch of security guards go running by. They're really kind of staging it like it's its own world. And that was cool. And they did something on SmackDown tonight before we started recording that was interesting, in that they had Cross and Scarlett cutting a promo. And unfortunately, Cross only looked at the camera once. He was kind of getting into Aleister Black territory in terms of the promo content. And Scarlett's just, seducing all of us by staring directly into our eyes, which, I appreciate. I want people to stare into the camera. That's all I want. But then he ends the promo and he's looking and he's kind of sneaking off camera to the stage left. And he looks around the corner and there's Drew McIntyre getting ready to go out for his match and Drew McIntyre's music hits. And it's like, all right, that's kind of cool. I mean, they're doing some interesting scene work. And I find, if they can continue to do that, I don't want it to overwhelm the viewers. I'd love for an angle to be, 6 weeks of Easter eggs that you go, that when it happens, you realize, oh, that's what was going on. But they've never done that well. But I'm here for them making interesting choices in the short term, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I get, not to sound like canny, but there is just this vibe that I have right now of
let's see how it plays out.
No, but in a completely different way. Before when Kenny is saying that, he is saying that hoping that Vince McMahon, a person we discussed earlier, is just rotten as hell, was gonna somehow turn the corner and change his narrative sensibilities and adjust in a way that just never made any sense whatsoever. In this case, we know that there are different people and we know that there are new faces and people in control here and new talent is being showcased. And right now, tentatively, a lot of things seem really positive. We are seeing Kevin Owens sort of reset into this prize fighter sort of Kevin Owens iteration. Then we have Tommaso Ciampa clearly getting a lot of showcase and burn here. Look, Karrion Kross, I am less optimistic about. I've just never been impressed with the dude. Adam Cole's promo against Karrion Kross still burns in my brain every time I see this guy, as does the time that I saw him basically like get completely outclassed by Jeff Hardy, of all people, live in Dallas. But you like look at that. You look at Hit Row. You look at the way that these matches are being worked on TV too. Dana Brooke and Tamina having a very sort of different style of match than they would have like 2 years ago, against the Dakota Kai and Io Sky tag team. I do feel like things are changing slowly, and that like we are evolving to a different style. I'm with you. I will believe that this company is doing Easter egg and slow seeded storylines when I see it, but for the first time in a long time, especially with these backstage vignettes, it seems as though it is possible that we might be in a world where you are rewarded for paying attention, and we might be in a world where things that happened last week actually matter next week. And that little plot beats from 2 weeks ago, like, hey, remember that car accident? Will actually be paid off and rewarded and make you feel smart for paying attention and following those threads and caring about those things. I guess my last point of where I do see a sense of difference or I feel a sense of difference is just the way commentary has been. Yeah. I mean, across the board, every single show, whether it's Vic and Wade or the Raw commentary team or Cole and Graves, I still like a line that will really define this era for me is when Cole said to Graves, I liked you better when they told you to shut the hell up from the pay-per-view. It speaks to this idea that things have changed. And it's not going to be like, you know, it's everything we want it to be now or whatever, but like it is a different era and we are slowly moving to something else.
God forbid it makes Pat McAfee more of a wild card. Because he's just going to say whatever he thinks because he has FU money and he can walk anytime. I'm here for that. Yeah, no, I agree.
Although, ironically, now with less of an authority figure to push against, like, you know, McAfee's the classic kid who needs the strong teacher to actually be able to be like his best, right? When you have the teachers like, oh, okay, whatever, it annoys a guy like McAfee because he can't really, like, you know, well, I'm sticking it to the man. No, you're not. Whatever. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
I'm a little worried about the choices of people, but I understand why. Like,
Hey, man, I'm looking at Nikki A.S.H. and Dewdrop, and I'm seeing some improvements. I like the idea that, like, these people are going to have a little bit more say over what they're doing.
Well, I'm actually going to go into that in my next point, but I was just saying, you know, like Karrion Kross and Hit Row and Dexter Lumis, and I think Lumis gets over. I don't think Lumis can wrestle as great. I mean, I think Lumis's reputation as a wrestler is far.
He's perfect for their company,
he's
though.
Fine. I think he's been slagged a bit by, and no offense to Uncle Dave. I like Uncle Dave, but Dave came out and goes, he's terrible. And everybody just assumed he was terrible, at least in our circle of friends. He's not great. He can punch and kick. He can do suplexes. He's fine.
He's got that over the rope flip too.
He works like the character he is, and that will make him better. And I think he'll be fine. I'm interested to see if the entire way comes back. I think Gargano, I was expecting him a little bit, but I think he's kind of wait and see and take the money when it comes. But I could see Lumis and Austin Theory getting back together in some way, and that'd be kind of interesting. But yes, it's interesting. And in that note, I'll go with my next one that I'll do. Also of interest is the entire tonal shift to the women's division on both of these shows, where Bayley and her crew are opening the show. You know, the women are getting a lot more time. They're getting a lot more things. They've brought back the tag titles in a tournament. Hints of Naomi and Sasha possibly coming back to face the winners of these tournaments. But yeah, and when you juxtapose that with the other women's division, it's definitely a plus in their cap, I think, to have a very top heavy women's division that can go and can interest people. And I think it's a positive sign that at least ratings don't tank when the women are on in WWE.
Yeah, I think the presentation of the women has already kind of felt just stronger.
With one exception, Liv Morgan.
Okay, yeah, yes.
How do you kill a babyface in one booking? Yeah, do what they did at SummerSlam. That's the one match we didn't go over in SummerSlam. In our Lazy River that time was when she tapped at two on the three count. And then they come out and she's getting you tapped out chance.
And she has to try to like promo over that. No, it's God love her. She really did all that you could. But like she's basically putting this impossible finish in order. How do you save face coming out of this? You did. You tapped out.
The tap had to come at three. It couldn't have come at two. It had to come at
three. No. Right. Yeah. Or after three. It needed to actually be after the count. Like she held on just long enough. But in this case, you create this weird schmozzy finish. Now the crowd is weirdly and ironically on Ronda's side. Weirdly, this has been the first time.
This is the way they babyface her after being completely unlikable for all these years.
They babyfaced her by turning her heel, like during the, you know, she's like, the problem with that finish, right, is that after the match, she's pissed off. Okay, but she has a reason to be. Yeah. She felt the tap.
She was in wrong.
In her mind, the referee officiated the match incorrectly. She could even go further in her mind and go, the referee was biased against me, that they were count. I clearly had a submission on, but the referee elected to count a pinfall instead of spotting the submission. In her mind, she is absolutely justified to be outraged. And worse still, in the fans' mind, she is also absolutely justified to be outraged. And Liv Morgan, on the other hand, what leg does she have to stand on? She got bailed out. She got bailed out. Who cheers for a babyface?
This is why you have these champions do strong wins to win the title. Because now she did a roll up on the Money in the Bank cash in, and now she's gotten a two count.
Worse still. I mean, if you really want to get into it, that Ronda handled gracefully at the time. The first time Ronda got sucked out, Ronda was like, okay, whatever, that's sports, so it goes. The second time, now she's outraged.
All right, Chris, you're up next.
Okay. Let us talk a little bit, I suppose, about Quake at the Lake here.
Okay.
Let's get my Quake at the Lake results here.
If you want to listen to my granular reviews, Dynamite Show, Fight Game Media, $5 on the Patreon. We go up Wednesday night. I want to hear Chris's thoughts mostly because I already got mine out. I was not. Well, I'm gonna vamp while you look.
I'm ready to rock.
Please.
Okay, so here's my thought as I'm watching this show, and maybe I'm just becoming boring in my old age, Jeffrey. But when Darby Allin and Brody King started gushing blood immediately for. I am aware for a certain subset of the audience that's like, hell yeah, let's do this. Blood everywhere. That's awesome. Marketing Chris kicks in and goes, dope. So you were just like your family. You were just watching something else. Kids are like, let's watch wrestling this week. Okay, whatever, we'll watch wrestling. You turn it on and immediately these two skull dudes are bleeding all over the place. Like, is your wife going to let you keep this on with the kids? Probably not.
It wasn't earned.
Dude, there's so much blood on this show. And like, yes, it's not earned. It doesn't even gross me out. To me, it has It feels like a spamming thing. And by spamming, it's like when I watch like a guitar player, like when I'm working, and all they have is one guitar trick, and that's what they do for every solo. Like they're the Eddie Van Halen guy, and all they know is taps, and they're just going back to the taps. And it's not that there's not something impressive about being able to do Eddie Van Halen taps. It's not that there's not something slightly badass about, you know, getting bloody and messed up or whatever. But the more you do it, the less impressive it gets. And if everyone's doing it, see the 1980s with tap solos, then it's really not that special at all. And this is sort of my thought on like the level of blood on this show. Like if everyone's bleeding, then it doesn't like it doesn't it make doesn't any matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Right.
I don't mind blood in a street fight or anything like that. I just don't want it to be right off the bat necessarily. All I was thinking was, I forget if it was Starcade 85 or 84, but there was a inappropriately named Mexican Death Match, which was you have to take a sombrero off of a pole between Manny Fernandez and Abdullah the Butcher.
You know, Jeffrey, I don't actually think the name is the problem here
it's
the hat.
It's the hat. But Abdullah the Butcher was bleeding within 10 seconds of that match starting, you know, because it was just like his forehead was so, it was just from there, as opposed to building up to the point where the blood was going to start flowing. And now, you know, you're in the middle of a fight. I found it was a hot opener. Don't get me wrong.
You know, that's the weird thing is it's like, especially if this is like the main event or whatever, you have like a slightly longer version of this as the main event. That Brody bouncing into the coffin spot was fantastic. It was wonderfully executed. Sting coming out of the coffin. Of course, that's where he's going to come from, but it was still fun. Sting's great. I think Brody and Darby have just like great chemistry together. I love watching these two.
Watching Brody just throw him around like a
rat. Yeah, I know. It's great. No, like,
and what they did with this one was great. The staging of all of Darby is just flying through and coming to attack him were great, but at the same time,
no, I don't want to bury the lead that I don't want to like bury the thought that I actually really enjoyed this match. It's just my top line thought watching this show is, geez Louise, there's a lot of blood on here, and it's like it's just stupid blood.
And it's blood for blood's sake.
Blood for blood. Yeah, no, I know. Like it's. It's like the 90s when everything had a chair shot in it or something,
or
like
kendo stick or a light tube. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, that's close to a top line for me. Mine is tangential to that. I just think a wrestling television show needs a certain pace. And I think they wore themselves out with these first two matches. And then they lost the adrenaline. It's like a fighter who comes out and starts swinging for that first round knockout and doesn't get it, and then has to rest the next three rounds. And you're waiting to see if he can come back and get energy back in the last round to hopefully take it. That's what this was for me. I just was like, okay, you had two hot. I mean, because they just want to burn. They want to burn the wrestling matches. They had a hot crowd. I'm not saying they didn't do an enjoyable show for the audience.
I know it's really weird, right? Because like the audience is really into it, but for me at this point, the Lucha Brothers matches are all the same match.
Yes, what was built out of this match other than the Punk Moxley thing, which was fairly well done, I thought. But at the same time, we're 4 weeks out of their next big pay per view. And okay, I'll get into the Lucha Brother thing. How many times do we have to see Penta's mask get tied in the damn ropes before he figures out he shouldn't wear that mask?
Right, at a certain point, he's the idiot, right? Like, yes. at a certain point, you can't go, oh, these Rudos have no honor. Duh. Like, duh.
They've been taking off Penta's mask every week, unless we're leading to a demasking. Which would be interesting, but at the same time, not, because it's like, well, they've just been taking off their masks every damn week.
Right. If you did a mask versus, like, if you did a thing where his mask was on the line and he lost his mask, it wouldn't feel like this terrible tragedy. It wouldn't feel like something was stolen from him, because his mask has been coming off on a regular basis to the point where they're losing matches. It's like,
Eventually, Fisk says, hey, look, man, I got a mortgage to pay. You're blowing it out there. Get a different mask, you dope. My favorite moment in that match was it was towards the end. And I guess Andrade was supposed to get him in that basically kind of like the Scorpion death drop move. But Phoenix was just leaning back and Andrade's kind of selling in the turnbuckle. Phoenix was basically yelling at him in the corner. Hey, come grab me because I'm bent over for your move right now. This match was rough. I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was. I think Roosh is
the standout. Fantastic. Yeah, right. He out of all these guys, Roosh has been sort of the standout for me lately. Andrade when he's
Andrade's lost a step, and I don't know why.
Right.
I mean, when Andrade guess why?
But. All I can do is guess. But yeah,
and the
Andrade when he's good is good, and the Lucha Bros are just sort of autopiloting.
Getting into this because I'll get into my point now. Another overarching point I had was wrestling exists in a certain world and you have to be able to, there's a lot of Stanford adjacent stuff that AEW does at from time to time, but what they've really been doing now is killing moves. Like in this Lucha Brothers match, you had a Canadian Destroyer on the apron. The commentary literally says, I guess Andrade's been knocked out of this match. And 15 seconds later, he gets up and pushes Rey Fénix off the ropes. John Moxley in the main event stayed in the Walls of Jericho for 4.5 minutes. Now, look, I can get the story of, oh, he's in the Blackpool Combat Club. And they've been training him to be able to take pain for a long amount of time. I was able to kind of poo-poo it a little bit when they said, just turn your neck on a pile driver. But you're in this move for 4 minutes, where most people tap out in like 30 seconds. A minute, I'm good with. 2 minutes, I'm good with. The entire commercial break, I saw people calling this awesome. And I said no, because I'm like, okay, John Moxley is too strong of a character now.
Yeah, no, he should, especially when
he's
he doesn't
Hogan.
Come.
He's Hogan pretty much now.
When he doesn't come out selling that his back is basically broken for the rest of the match, it's a huge problem.
Please don't come in with, oh, he was selling. He did the my arm, Rodney Dangerfield from Caddyshack.
Right, no, people really think about what the appropriate level of selling is supposed to be after spending 4.5 minutes in the Lion Tamer.
Yeah, for me, that took me out of the match, and I know a lot of
I'm with you.
I understand people's love of it, and oh, Jeff, you're just an old fuddy. I mean, I felt like I was becoming Jim Cornette watching this AEW show this week, and I didn't want to be, but I was also in pain at the time, so whatever.
I don't care for Jericho as a human, but like I will say, as a wrestler during this match, it felt like he was really trying to do stuff truthful to that era of his style of match, yeah, which I appreciated. And like he was working. I mean, I like
the promo failed. The promo absolutely failed.
Yes.
It was a babyface promo, but yeah.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, that was the problem with this match too, is that like once you send him out there as the Lionheart, you're appealing to nostalgia. You're like basically setting up a number of seeds that are all babyface seeds. You know, the old guy trying to do it one more time. The old guy paying homage to his past. The old guy paying homage to a dead legend. There's just all these things that effectively were babyface storylines for Jericho here. And nowhere near enough Jericho Appreciation Society reminders during the match. I'm not saying you needed like lots of run-ins or whatever, but like I think you needed like him to sort of like sports entertain and remind people that like, no, he's a dick. You don't actually want him to be champion.
Yes. Yeah. I think sports entertain was a good phrase. It's your turn, sir.
Okay. So I want to build off your point on the middle of this show here, because like it really did sort of struggle in the middle here. Like the Luchasaurus versus Anthony Henry thing was like a nothing moment. Ricky Starks versus Aaron Solo, super nothing. Jade Cargill versus Madison Rayne, super nothing. Like there's just like nothing to really talk about with any of those.
No, but I mean, I can give little moments that I liked if we don't want to just cranky bitch about it.
I'm not gonna like cranky bitch about it. I'm just like none of these matches,
you're right.
they're all skippable. And when you're talking about how it opened strong and then you're like, it was like going for a knockout from the start, and then like we had the Lucha Brothers thing, like okay, and then it's like, oh, Anthony Agogo, okay, or Anthony, you know, like
Anthony Henry,
Aaron Solo. That's where I crossed my wires. No, these are just like sort of like nothing matches. Yeah.
And they didn't really build angles out of it per se. I mean, I liked, I really enjoyed the staging. I thought of the Jungle Boy running back after Christian, because they made him look smart. He goes, he takes a look up at the Titantron. He looks at the back and he goes, okay, where is he recording this? He goes running back, and the staging of this just flying in with the security running in, I thought was actually quite, quite good. That was possibly my favorite shot of the night in terms of just camera work and things like that, was just Jungle Boy flying in like a bat out of hell on Christian and Christian getting out of there. And of course, Lucha beats up the security, doesn't lay a hand on Christian. I still think he's a heel.
I still think he's a heel too. I mean, the one thing that was a problem for me is, you know, on commentary, like Jack still doesn't really have an explanation for Luchasaurus. So he was just keeping him warm for me. Just keeping him warm for me. Keeping him safe so I could kick his ass.
The war of extra talented wasn't much. But let's, as Shake Them Ropes connoisseurs and people who like the little things, let's give some praise here to QT Marshall. QT Marshall is fantastic in whatever he does. If it's a squash match, if it's whatever, this match afterwards, Ricky Starks sees. Oh, and we'll get into the other part of what's the name of their stable? The factory.
The factory.
Because I want to talk about something in that, and I didn't have it on my rundown, but I do want to go back to it. But when Ricky Starks bolts for the stand and jumps over the barricade, QT does one of the best bumbling heels over a barricade move so that he doesn't actually catch up with him that I've seen in wrestling in a while. It was fantastic. He is a great, I call him the Kevin James of wrestling because of his hair, but he is actually has very good mid-card comedic heel timing. And I think he's fantastic as a personality. Now, let me get to the factory. This Nick Camarado gimmick is bad. And I know I've seen a lot of people praising it, but here's why it's actually bad. Tony Khan has gotten to. I understand the joke of Cole, whatever they've renamed the former Two Dimes, being, you know, the stupidity of that story on NXT and being killed. You don't want to bring attention to that by then making Nick Camarado Tony D'Angelo, which is what they've done here. Lollipop and all. He is a walking commentary on NXT. And NXT isn't your competition. Your competition's Raw now. Okay, Mr. I'm number one on cable.
Yeah, and the 2 million people who watch Raw, I gotta be honest with you. If 600,000 of them know who Tony D'Angelo is,
I'll be surprised.
I would be surprised. No, yeah, earnestly.
There are ways to take shots at your company, and I don't mind it. And this is where I think Joe Lanza and I strongly disagree, that he loves all the shots on TV. I think there's ways to do the shots where you stay in this world and you prop up your product more. Like when the Horsemen would always like talk about the big muscle guys or whatever running out of breath, because they were too busy pumping weights and stuff, as opposed to, you know, going over wrestling strategy and stuff like that. When they were talking about, we don't have fancy costumes and things like that, you know, the veiled shots, the okay shots,
Even Robert Stone, I think, is actually a nice little veiled shot where it's not like he apes every single mannerism.
This is Tony Khan right now.
Right. Like Tony Khan calls him or has the video package where they call him a visionary. And then the next week, Robert Stone is on TV calling himself a visionary. Like it's not that referential.
It's not a one-to-one, apples-to-apples thing. And this is almost a direct, we've plucked the Tony D'Angelo character and put it in the AEW universe.
Which is like hilarious.
I like Camarado because he's a monster.
He's like a monster hoss heel. And like the D'Angelo character, the general consensus is the D'Angelo character kind of sucks. Some people like it, like ironically, but like he is like just like this.
I may push back on that because I think he does a good job of this character, even though the character itself
okay, sucks. Okay. Yeah, I'm not saying Tony D'Angelo the performer sucks. Gotcha. I actually think he's pretty decent. And I would be interested to see what this guy could do in something less tropey. Man, he's good in the ring too. I think there's a bunch of stuff that's really solid with him. But it's not a good heel character in this. Like, okay, if you put away the offensiveness, it's not a good heel character in the sense that like people kind of like this character. And when he comes out, everyone cheers him. He doesn't get this nuclear booing ever.
Right.
His music is not, if not hummable, it's not like his music's like, you know, standard generic Italian music that's kind of like catchy and sort of upbeat. He's smiling and he's gesturing to the crowd. He's not like, I hate all of you. He's actually quite, as a character, quite a bad heel. Mm-hmm. Because the only times that he's ever really dastardly are off screen. And the main person he's been antagonizing for months now is Santos Escobar, who was effectively a heel, although like again sort of like a ineffective heel in the sense that people like the Legatos. He was effectively a heel, why would you want to import that into AEW? Yeah. is my circle back on all of this. I just if you were gonna grift a character from WWE and bring it in, obviously this doesn't make any sense now, but like Hit Row, like doing a knockoff of Hit Row and repairing that swerve would make infinitely more sense than spoofing Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, I have fears for Legado del Fantasma because I think Escobar loses and goes to the main roster, but I think they probably upgrade his sidekicks to being possibly Garza and Dimples because we haven't seen them in a long time. I have my fears of what happens with our guys Raul Mendoza and I forgot his three letter name. What's the DJ's former name?
Oh, DJ Z. But who is he now? He's Joaquin Wild. I wanted to call him Wacky and Wild.
Although I wouldn't mind that being a 5-person stable.
I was just thinking. I'm like, I don't. In my head, I guess I don't necessarily see a problem with Legato as these like five. I mean, like,
although you know what my problem is, it's you know who they're directly going to be fighting next?
The Mysterios.
The Mysterios.
Oh, I mean, probably just Ray, because it looks like the Dominic going heel thing is still out there. When Rhea brought out Dominic, I'm like, look, I have my doubts about presentation, but I just don't actually think they're going to keep trying to sell this. Dominic is actually consistently getting his ass beaten by Rhea Ripley. I think if anything, they're going to be an item at the end of this.
Oh.
Like an evil couple. Yeah. No, I think he's joining Judgment Day.
Is it my go or your go?
I think it's your go.
Okay. I am going to my last note because I've gotten to most everything on my rundown. And I'll expound on things I forgot because it's one of those things where I didn't want to go through. I've already been through Dynamite segment by segment, so I only want to do the hot takes and then.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to seg by seg NXT, but there are a lot of things that I think are interesting Technicolor vomit.
Let me get this last one in. Because I've already clowned on the Bucks segment enough. That was just I'll get to the Bucks. earmark the Bucks segment, because we should talk about that a little bit, because it was important for both the Trios title and for the, possibly this next pay-per-view card. But I wanted to give some love to a show that people don't watch it off, and that's Main Event. T-Bar, the former Dijakovic. I was going to say Dominic Dijakovic, but I forgot what they made his first name again. But him and Ali, Mustafa Ali, killed it on that show. They let them go out there and have a wrestling match, like an indie-style wrestling match. And it was, it got over. He won with, I think, a top rope Canadian Destroyer on the big guy. Look, if Triple H can bring back more wrestling to my wrestling, I'm good with that. Promos and wrestling, that's all I really want, Chris. But this match was pretty damn good.
I know. I quietly would love to see Main Event. No, I would love to see Main Event get back to where it was 10 years ago, where it was sneaky, actually a good hour of television to watch.
Solid hour with three
People just trying to get a little bit of spotlight and actually having matches that are formatted. They're actually kind of perfect for where they sit too when you see this show live, where it's like early, it's just kind of warm up the crowd. You have like three guys who aren't going to probably work again this week, or, you know, six guys who aren't going to work again this week. And then you just go out there and have some burner matches.
Yeah.
That can get people jazzed up and excited to see some wrestling tonight. And like, no,
and
like,
then, and then take the guys who are weak on promos and have them do some promos on this show.
Yeah, right. This is a great opportunity. This is the stepping stone to me between NXT and the main roster that the company has not actually been fully utilizing. Once someone is ready to move on from NXT, I mean, I know they put them on Main Event sometimes. I know, no, it's not always like this, Chris. Like, they actually do it sometimes. But, like, I also know that they don't use it as a steady. They have not been using Main Event it as well as they have been in the past. And, like, I think that there's a real interesting opportunity to turn this back into a sleeper show again. I'd love to see that happen. Okay, so I'm going to skip Nikita Lyons and Kiana James and just say that, like, not impressed yet. not impressed yet.
With which one?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Roderick Strong, Apollo Crews, and the Diamond Mine stuff. Dude, like, I actually think that this has been a real it's been a real great opportunity for the Creeds to sort of spread themselves out as characters.
Yep.
Julius continues to get more and more interesting, and like, he's just this interesting multi-layered character who's like thoughtful, cares about training. I don't know. Like, I really like where they're ending up with Julius. Brutus is cool too. He doesn't say nearly as much. Julius is like the mouthpiece for the two of them.
But it's also rebuilt Apollo really well too, I think.
It has, right? He's like, Apollo's really interesting. I don't know if the flash of violence in his eye or whatever thing, where I thought that was a little weird. Oh, and like, that was a little like Lucha Underground for me. Yeah. And it's just not what this world is. Okay. I loved Andre Chase and Tia, oh my God. Like, she's really funny. He's really funny. Like, all of this was very good.
When you had told me, and I've said this on the show before, that I believe that's Harlem, the former Harlem Bravado, was signed by NXT. And I went, I had seen them in Evolve. I'm like, oh, the Bravado brothers. I'm just, okay, they're okay. They're kind of decent, you know, prelim dude type things. They have a little bit of character to them. Andre Chase has outkicked his coverage. He has gotten over with this crowd, even if it's in an ironic way, with this whole intermittent swearing gimmick.
Yes, it's great. Like he the veneer of being a teacher like only lasts for so long, and then he loses his mind. I mean part of this has an appeal to me as a teacher too. Like it's funny to, you know, watch someone do the job badly.
It's a fantastic bit.
It's really good. And I mean, the other thing though, I think that's great is that, like, essentially, all these people who get to work with Andre Chase, these younger talents, are getting to go to like a form of school, so to speak. Like they're getting comedy chops. Like, the Chase you think is a really great opportunity for Bodie.
Bodie is a perfectly fine.
Bodie's awesome. And, like, yeah, Bodie. Yeah. and Tia are actually perfect.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Babyface comedy character types. And like they play off of Chase great. And like, no, I mean, this is an act that continues to get stronger, and that, like, I just think, like,
I don't think it gets over on the main roster.
That's no, I don't think thing. It gets made over on the main. I don't know that it's destined to the main roster anytime soon, though. I think it's okay. Still probably going to be here in NXT for a minute, and I think that'll be good because I think
perfectly fine NXT
in this new era. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Is Carmelo Hayes a babyface or a heel? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. That's the answer. I thought the Giovanni Vinci thing was so strange right after the Wesley and Trick Williams thing.
Yeah.
Like to basically kind of have those back to back where, like, I guess theoretically I'm excited
it's
to see
almost
Vinci.
Almost in line with the real Allen Iverson, since they're using that as a backdrop, because he was a heel to a lot of people. He was a face to a lot of people.
But in this case, they have, I mean, okay, I think if you're going to do that, though, like, and I'm with you, like, I like the Allen Iverson thing for sure, and I think that's a great persona to port onto a wrestler for sure. Like, I'm glad to finally, like, I actually think it's overdue, so it's dope to see this happening. I guess you could say that happened a little bit with MVP. But you just had him do an objectively heel thing in the previous match, loading up Trick Williams's glove.
Yes, and that rounds match was garbage.
Oh, right. It made a farce out of the Heritage Cup, which I think was the real problem. It's like, you're like talking about Mark Coffey coming over here as the Heritage, you know, Cup champion. I mean, it was Trick Williams going to go into his match with Mark Coffey like that? And if he does do that, I hope Mark Coffey just beats the crap out of him and beats him in one round. No, like I think it's actually important to establish that.
Let me go into the thing I just earmarked here, and this will finally be my last thing. This Bucks Hangman Page segment. The after school special, the Bucks finally say, hey, do you want to go to the prom with me? And Paige says, no, I can't, because I want to see my friends have dates and stuff. Well, let me ask you this, because there were talks of, hey, I mean, are they purposefully doing this ironic bad?
Yes. I don't think it's for the comedy stuff. I think the arc here is that they are actually heels. And so when they're...
That's the point I was going to get to. But since it's been brought up now, let's talk about this. Because they were just turned on by the Undisputed.
Right. When these guys are getting together and thinking about their storylines, I just want them to remember what they did last week.
It's not me then, because
when
they went out, when they did this, and it felt heartfelt at first and stuff. And then when Cutler goes, hey, well, maybe I can be your partner.
Right. They clearly had the moral reversion.
Yeah. They immediately went back to being jerks to him and that stuff. And I know it was the comedy button that on the sketch, and I get that.
See it merely as that, though.
I didn't either. I saw it as them being disingenuous.
Yes.
To Paige and the Dark Order. And the
Well, it's more than that, right? Because Paige literally was like basically saying right at the end of this, well, how about Brandon? Why wouldn't you go with the guy who's never turned his back on you? And that's Brandon. Yeah. And Brandon's like, that's me. And then you see the Bucks mannerisms change back to a heel mannerism. It was more than just shut up Brandon as a comedy button, right? Like they always say that no matter what. Because they could have said shut up Brandon, but in a tone that suggested, yeah, we're gonna make you our tag team partner. Yes, we know that, Brandon.
I think they might. I think they're
no, I think that, I think thing. They I think they do that anyways.
They're teasing the hell out of Kenny, but I think they lose in the first round, possibly.
Yes. Right. Okay. Yeah, but no, I thought that this was weak yet again. Adam Page emo theater is just not doing it for me.
Worse emo theater, Mysterio or Page?
Paige is not even fun for me. Mysterio is worse objectively. Like if we're talking about like
who is the worst actor?
Like not even close. Like Rey, all time living legend, one of the all time bad promos.
Just Ed Wood Hall of Fame.
Yeah, right. He really would be amazing in Ed
Dominic, my son, who I've known for 20 plus years.
I remember when you were a little boy, son.
you know what? We can end on the main event. I liked the match other than the walls was fine. But here's another thing that they did that's so derivative, and I thought it hurt the Moxley character in a way. The Hogan Rock looking to the audience spot when Punk came in to end the show, why didn't Moxley just punch him in the face or pie face him? And he would have been so over for doing that. As opposed to the Rock, Hogan, stare at one side, stare at the other. Oh, we're going to have a fight type. Moxley doesn't like anybody. Just have him punch him.
Right. Especially after going like, this is the FYI title or whatever. Yes.
I think
Moxley should really, in the wake of that match, having just survived 4.5 minutes in the Lion Tamer, should be really high on his own BS and basically like see Punk and just be like, screw you.
High on his BS. He went out there and was like, oh yeah, with his boy Cesaro, you know, kind of like Cobra Kai smacking, you know, the hand.
Yeah, no, after flipping him the bird, but I mean, he should have just popped Punk.
Just
pop him. Yeah, pop him. You know, like, oh God, there he is, the paper champion.
I got nothing else on my list. You got anything?
Sangha continues to be interesting.
Sangha's great. I just don't know.
This is a weird usage of him, but like I continue to be like going like, this guy's a decent little character actor. Like yeah, he's got personality.
He has very good timing.
Right? Yeah, he's
and
got
very good and very good delivery of his lines. That's the thing that's getting him through this is he has very good he has the right emotion for the line at every point.
Yeah, he's just intriguing because I don't know where he's at in the ring at this exact moment. But if he's starting to figure that piece out and like he's just interesting. He's an interesting character. I'm interested. I like the thing about WWE for me right now really is that with the old man gone and no longer being the main shot caller in Raw, there really is an opportunity for a number of these people to break out. I mean, even promos, some of them are still like a little over scripted or whatever, but you are starting to see some of these promos with like more veteran performers being trusted to be a little bit looser and a little bit more bullet pointy.
Yeah, they're a little looser. They're not totally loose.
Not totally, but like even just the edict of like, yeah, you're allowed to react to the crowd. Don't just bulldoze. Like, yeah, don't just like, if the crowd is like going one way, you don't actually have to just completely bulldoze past them. You are seeing those little notes. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these people take advantage of this opportunity.
Yep. We'll end it there. He's Chris Novembrino. You can follow him on Twitter at DWATG. My name is Jeff Hawkins. You can follow me at Twitter at CrapGame13. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. When the episode drops, it tweets. That's how it works. We're part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Shows for every kind of wrestling fandom there, including the flagship with Rich and Joe, 5-star match game with Joe Gagne, Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, and more. Check us out over there at voicesofwrestling.com. Join the Voices of Wrestling Discord server. I'm in there when people give me feedback for the show, talking, defending my points of view, defending Chris, even asking what the heck Hatchet is because I have no clue. Chris also has a Patreon of his own called Don't Worry About the Government. He's going to tell you about it now.
Yeah, patreon.com/DWATG. You can check out the latest episode, Don't Worry About the Government, which dropped this week. Want to hear about my thoughts on Donald Trump having Mar-a-Lago raided by the FBI? That's the place to go and check it out. It will be out on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify here later on this weekend. If you are in the Dallas area and you want to see your boy Novi play a little bass this week, come on down to Adair's Saloon on Sunday night, 10 to 1. I will be on bass with the great William Dunnell. You can follow my antics musically at instagram.com/Dr_Nov, D-O-C-T @DWATOR_NOV. I can spell. So those are all the places. Don't worry about the government @DWATG, patreon.com/DWATG, Dr. Nove on Instagram, Dr_Nove, and @8airs Sunday night, 10 p.m. Central Time. Be there or BL7.
I'll get one quick plug to top you. I'm on Fight Game Media every Wednesday doing the Dynamite Show with Paul Fontaine, $5 a month. A lot of more stateside type of wrestling on Fight Game Media, but that's at patreon.com/fightgamemedia. I'm in pain.
L7.
L7.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.